Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, 2013 Masters champ and former world number one Adam Scott joins us to talk about the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, how the anchor ban affected his career, and whether he's too nice of a competitor on the course. Please have a listen. I'm in New York City with Masters champ and former world number one, Adam. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time here. Now, I know, let's start with the U.S. Open. I know it wasn't the result you wanted, but you weren't alone in terms of big names kind of missing the cut. Why do you think it was that so many stars struggled at Erin Hills?
It's really hard to know what to put that down to other than just coincidence. Mm-hmm. You know, I really... It was interesting watching overall with a new venue, untested, unproven, and there was so much talk about it being the longest US Open right. ever, but I think what we ended up seeing was that was completely neutralized by the width of the fairway, and not so long hitter like Brian Harman contending, among others, who are not known for their length, and a lot of the big names who are known for their length struggled. So, you know, there's still no getting around not playing well, but the length of the course and the softness of the conditions kind of neutralized the advantage of the big hitters, for sure. And then it seemed like all the top players, almost all the top players that you'd expect to be there played poorly. There's no other way. I mean, none of them could say they played well and missed the cut there because the fairways were so generous. But if you missed it, it was extremely penalizing. And I think that's what happened.
Before the tournament, you said the USGA in recent years has dropped the ball. Do you think they picked it up this week? Or did you like how it ended up turning out or not?
I think they had a fine tournament. I would just say it's status quo for the moment. You know, it's interesting. I think it was brilliant to see some exciting stuff, eagles and birdies. We haven't seen this for a long time. It's a very hard balance. I mean, they have a very difficult job. You know, they make it tough on themselves too sometimes by going to a new venue with no history behind it that lets them know how to do a setup. I mean, obviously they were fairly conservative, and I think that was the right thing to do. So I think this was a fairly successful US Open, but when you look at the big picture of things, I mean, it feels like a lot of tournaments I play, every tournament, even on the PGA Tour, is setting their courses up tougher too. And so then for the USA Open to separate themselves from any other tournament, how tough they have to set it up. And my comments came from the point, it always borders on the line of, well, this is, you know, if you're losing your ball just off the green in manicured grass, not unkept grass, have we gone too far with it all? And we've got to look at different ways of challenging the best players. And I think, you know, there's stuff to learn from Erin Hills too, where if it's soft, it's easy. You could make it 8,000. You can make it 8,500 yards. If it's soft, we're going to play. We're going to shoot a good score. Look, I think we can take some good things away from it. There's a good champion. It was a good tournament. Probably people are going to say it wasn't tough enough and they want to see a tougher US Open. When I say a borderline gets silly, because the top 10 guys enjoy a US Open, the top 10 finishers. The guys who aren't in the top 10 are just beaten. And maybe that's the way it should be, but I don't know. It's that balance of where the game's at, how far everyone hits it, how you can make it tough for us. There's no doubt in my mind having it firm and fast makes it tough. Mm-hmm. And that makes us adjust the way we will play, even if it's short,
right,
golf course.
Right.
It may take driver out of our hands, but that's what makes it tough for us.
Happy belated Father's Day, by the way. And Father's Day was a big story this year. Obviously, Phil missing because of his daughter's graduation. Mm-hmm. DJ having a second kid. I understand you are going to have a second child. Are you ready for that? And how does life on tour change once you have children?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for two. It's, you know, having the first kid was quite overwhelming for sure. You know, it's an incredibly exciting time of your life. But it's double the responsibility having two. You know, it's really exciting, looking forward to that. But for sure, I think from what everyone says, it's going to change a lot. Probably not so much the way my tour life will change, but certainly at home. You know, it's now a little more responsibility, certainly for me, to feel I contribute when I'm at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the other pair of hands. Mm-hmm. It's one each.
Yeah.
Now, so, you know, I'm looking forward to it. It's, like I said, it's a great time of life. I don't know, my family doesn't travel a lot with me. Maybe they will more now, because I certainly feel, as my daughter now is nearly 2.5, she's starting to realize I go away. Mm-hmm. It's getting tougher. It really pulls at the heartstrings, mm-hmm, sometimes, and I'd like them to be there more. So maybe as the new one gets settled into life and we get into next year, I can get them to travel a little more with me, and we might have to change a few things that we do. But, you know, it's one of those things for me and my wife. We just kind of take it as it comes, and we do the best we can. And I certainly feel like being away is getting tougher and tougher.
Now, we're at a Uniqlo event. I wonder, what do you like so much about the product? And I understand you're actually involved in some of the designing of the clothes, mm-hmm, now. So how's, mm-hmm, that going?
Well, yeah, we'll clear the designing part up soon. It's been an amazing association with Uniqlo for me. Officially, the first week I wore Uniqlo, I won the Masters. And, you know, just getting back to the start of, if you have an interest in clothes and fashion, and golf has a long history of it, I think, and as a player, I've always looked up to Greg Norman,
mm-hmm,
and he was always presenting himself well,
mm-hmm,
you know, interesting style through the 90s for sure with, right, some of the Greg Norman collection clothing, but he always presented himself very well and carried himself well, and that left an impression on me, and it kind of resonated with me as look good, feel good, play good,
mm-hmm,
and I've always had that throughout my career. And when I was introduced to Uniqlo, the thing that many things appeal to me, but it's this crossover between not calling it golf clothing,
mm-hmm,
and liking all the clothing to be life wear, which I really like, because, you know, we need to innovate the game of golf, just like the world is innovating everything it does,
mm-hmm,
and Uniqlo is innovating, you know, the fashion world with what they do, and we need to break down some of these barriers with the game and see that this isn't just golf clothing. You know, this is now life wear, and you can play golf in it, sure, but you can go to work in the same pants. You can,
mm-hmm,
travel in it. You can do all these different kind of things, and I really like that crossover, and I've been looking for that for quite a few years with my clothing in golf, and, you know, it's been such a good fit, and I think our views on how things should happen are very similar,
mm-hmm,
so it's very easy for me to work with them, and they're incredibly supportive of me just playing the best I can and feeling the best I can in the product. So they've been very open-minded to any suggestions I've had as far as the design and functionality of the clothes, and I think it's more my contribution is to functionality,
mm-hmm,
far from calling myself a clothes designer, but It's been amazing working on them with what's now called the Kendo pants, which I wear very often on the golf course, among some of the other pants, but you know, that's been a very popular seller for them in the marketplace, and that was neat to see, because you know, that kind of came from me saying I'd like to work on the functionality of what I'm playing in, you know, just a little bit more stretch, a little less wrinkle, you know, we got to travel with
right.
I'm not the best ironer of clothing every day, but I want to look good for you guys, fit all these kind of things, and it's really gone well in the marketplace because, you know, very versatile, practical kind of clothing, and I think a lot of people are going that way with their lifestyle too, you know. It seems like time and money is the big driver of the world, and you know, not going to waste time or money picking these are my golf clothes, these are my other clothes, you know, it needs to all blend to one, and we can live much more simpler as the world gets far more complicated, and so I like all that kind of stuff, and it's not just the pants as well, it's been right through with whether it's my socks that I play in that, you know, help me breathe better, and just that overall performance is enhanced by the clothing I wear.
Well, you have some of the best looking outfits on tour. You have the best looking swing on tour. And a lot of the ladies think you're the best looking tour pro. What's it like having that rep, and do your fellow tour pros ever rib you about that?
I've been given plenty of ribbing over the years. Hopefully all in good spirit. You know, I take pride in where we started this conversation, in the clothing I wear. I want to look good out there, and I want to portray Uniqlo the best I possibly can. And you know, I think their story is amazing as a company, and it's not very well known here in America generally yet, and Australia, and they're kind of my two personal goals with it, is to kind of get the story out there a little bit, because I think once you give Uniqlo a chance, there's something there for everyone, no matter what your style is. It's known for some very iconic pieces to the people who know the brand well. But the staple pieces of clothing are very good. They're very affordable, good quality. And then, you know, if you have a different kind of taste, you'll find something in there as well. But, you know, I challenge everyone to try something, because some of the items that I'm very familiar with, that I live my life in, whether it's the Dryex, EX, polo shirts or workout shirts, the Kendo pants, the Kendo shorts, as good a product as I've seen from any company. And then when you take the price point into consideration, it's kind of hard to go past that. It really is. So, you know, I've very much been... the way I think about clothing has changed a lot over the last few years.
What up? You're also known as one of the nicest tour pros. Have you ever thought that if you were a little meaner, you might win even more? Has anybody ever asked you or told you that?
I don't think I don't think I need to be meaner on the golf course. I need to be meaner off the golf course. I think there's plenty of competitive drive in there. You know, golf is such a long career, and I think anyone who has some talent, it's very hard to live up to their potential, especially since Tiger Woods came along. And you know, guys like myself and Sergio came along right after Tiger, Justin Rose, and you know, I don't know, has any of us won enough? Well, no, not compared to Tiger Woods, you know. So it's a very hard one to answer, but we've had very fair, successful careers, and you know, I've won nearly 30 tournaments in my career now. Yeah, it's not a lot compared to Tiger Woods, but it's a fair amount compared to anyone else other than Sergio, really, my age, who's won maybe a few more times than me. But, you know, you look at the great players of generations, like Ernie Els has won 50, 60 times, Phil Mickelson the same, and they won a little bit more, but, you know, Phil doesn't seem to be a mean person to win. So, it's just about competing. And I think, you know, I look at guys like Phil and Ernie, and they have this habit of winning. It's a great habit to have. And they just have a knack of how to win. And I'm sure Phil's won tournaments playing awfully.
Right.
But he just knows how to win. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think it's easy to fall victim to the numbers game today, and if you're not playing good, you don't just think about winning, you think about hitting a fairway and hitting a green and swinging good and putting good, and when it's just about getting the ball in the hole. And I think if I remind myself a little bit more about that, I'd do even better.
Speaking of getting the ball in the hole, obviously you've had success since the anchor ban, but is there part of you that thinks, if that rule didn't come into play, you know, you'd have more success going forward?
Maybe, because I think about the time it was announced, the ban, which was a couple of years before it came into play, I mean, I was kind of at the peak. I was number one in the world and everything was going great. Gradually, it wore on me, because basically for every week for the next 2 years, I asked what I'm going to do when the ban comes into play. And about a year into that, the frustration of the whole thing got to me, and I started putting poorly. So the ban was welcomed by me in the end, because I got to change something I did with my putting. And that had good results. And has had some good results since. Yeah, it's very hard to know that question. I mean, I still disagree with the way they went about getting to the outcome of that. But, you know, they're making the rules, and they're going to, you know, they believe they have their best intentions, and I do also believe their best intentions. I just don't always agree with the way they get to their decisions.
Right. Do you know that you were first in strokes gained putting in 2004? It's the first year that the tour came. Do you know that stat? And
I do.
Why can't you just go back to that?
Right. You know, it's amazing. Well, so that's a backdated stat, because they didn't actually have the stuff.
Right.
So in 2004, it's amazing that I was about 85th and 90th in the two putting stats that we use, which is putts per green in regulation and putts per round.
Right.
They were the only two stats that the tour kept track of back then. And I think about 3 or 4 years later, they had the information, but they hadn't made the algorithm to do strokes gained putting, so they backdated it. It would be amazing to go back and know that in 2004 I'm the number one putter on tour, because the way you're considered and talked about, you know, if you think about a Luke Donald being the number one putter on tour, or Steve Stricker, they're revered for their putting, yet I've almost been laughed at for my putting my entire career. So, but more so for your own personal confidence.
Yeah.
You know, I sat there at 85th or 80th on these two other putting stats, very average on tour. Not embarrassing by any means with the world, but very average, because everyone thinks I hit it great, but I'm actually the best.
Yeah.
And that would make a huge difference to your psyche, I think, going forward. So, you know, it's very hard to dial back 13 years and find that feeling again, but I was aware of that.
Okay.
And it's very interesting, all that, how all that plays a part in everything.
Sure. Obviously, winning a first major is difficult. Has winning a second, or has the pursuit been more difficult, or what you expected? And how important is it to win a second major?
I think it is.
Or multiple majors.
Yeah, I think it is becoming more difficult. Even though it took me over 10 years or more to win my first major, realistically, I think I was really only prepared to win it for a couple of years before the belief and the level of my golf. Although I had a lot of potential early on, I never took it to that level at a major, never even really contended the first 10 years in a major, and played most of my worst golf of the year at majors, so I wasn't even close, and even honestly believing I could win. But for the couple years leading into the Masters, I did. I finished second at the Masters in 2011, and I had the near miss at the Open just the year before the Masters, then won the Masters. And I've tried to keep pushing hard to get that second major. But, you know, it's been 4 years now, which is a lot longer than the 2 years I thought I could win before the Masters. So it is proving to be more difficult. And to get another major, the second one, is really important to me because I'd like to be that multiple major guy. And I'd like, you know, my window is whatever it is now, you know, I'm mid-30s, it's not closing, but yeah, my next 10 years, certainly five, I feel it's very hard to play consistently at the top level in your 40s, is what I see the trend, you know, as I look at guys going into their 40s.
Right.
More fall off tour at the bottom end. Some of the top guys step down a level, and only a couple can manage to play consistently at a high level. But I believe if you've got that kind of major pedigree, you know, you're an elite player, and I look now, I talk about Mickelson and Els, they have the game, they know how to do it in a major. I still wouldn't not back them to win another major, each of them. So I want to be that guy. So I need to win a couple more in the next few years, and then hopefully I've got that chance in my 40s to pop up and surprise a few people somewhere.
President's Cup year. You're going to be back in the New York City area this time. How excited are you for that? And is this the year the internationals get back on the board?
It's very exciting that it's in the New York City area. I think the buzz is going to be huge from the players or from the internationals team side of things. I think the last cup in Korea was a big step for us. A lot went in between the teams and the tour to change some points, which we felt very strongly about, and it got a great result in the end with it coming down to the last hole of the last match, something that hasn't happened for about 10 years. So we need people to remember that and not remember the last 10 years of the internationals not really competing. Hopefully we remember what happened in Korea and get excited for this one. Look, I believe it's going to be really interesting. I think the US is going to have a pretty new look team, a young team. Doesn't mean a weak team by any means, as you look at Brooks just won a US Open. Some of the other guys on the team have been playing incredible and already established, but it's just a little younger team to look at. And you know, as always with the internationals, it's really up in the air because we can have some guys who aren't playing the US Tour have a nice summer and all of a sudden pop up in the team. So a lot of unknowns, and it would be great for it to be the year that the internationals win one. It'd be a long time coming for me. I've sat on many a losing team, unfortunately, and maybe I'm the problem. But I think no matter what, it's going to be very exciting if our guys can handle maybe the pressure of the New York crowd, we can get it done.
And finally, you were number one in the world at golf. Is there a household chore or something that you would say you'd be ranked pretty high in the world at? What are you good at around the house?
Laundry.
Yeah. Good laundry.
Yeah.
What makes you good?
Well, just having traveled on the road for so long by myself, you know, my clothes have been ruined so many times by hotel laundry that I'm very good at doing the laundry myself.
All right.
I'm very happy to do my own laundry.
Do it yourself.
I'm very happy to do the entire household's laundry at home. That I'm quite competent at, and I'd be happy to go up against anybody in the laundry field. Yeah.
All right, that's great. Get all your laundry needs around. Scott, Adam, thank you so much for your time. Good luck
go
the rest of
the season. Go easy on the fabric softener.
There we go.
My big tip.
There's the tip. Good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Adam Scott for joining us, and thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to us on iTunes and check back next week to see who our guest is.